Fewer but newer nuclear weapons threatening global peace. A leading research body concludes nuclear states are, quote, unwilling to disarm. The report also refers to Israel's nuclear arsenal, an issue that so far hasn't led to any kind of international scrutiny. On this edition of News Analysis, we're asking how safe the world can be with more than 19,000 nuclear weapons and what's being called a discriminatory approach in the fight against nuclear arms.
The report by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, SIPRI, once again highlights the bumpy road towards a world without nuclear weapons. SIPRI says the global nuclear threat remains strong, though world military spending has failed to rise for the first time since 1998. According to the think tank, at the start of 2012, some 19,000 nuclear warheads were stockpiled by the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, as well as Pakistan, India and Israel. Approximately 4,400 nuclear weapons are operational globally, and nearly 2,000 of them are kept in a state of high operational alert. A small portion of these weapons can destroy the entire planet Earth several times. According to SIPRI, the United States and Russia hold the highest number of nukes and are modernizing their arsenals. Washington and Moscow have also deployed some 4,000 nuclear warheads. Article 6 of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty obliges nuclear-armed states to completely disarm under strict and effective international control. Another challenge with regards to the issue of disarmament is transforming WMDs into smaller weapons which have the same, if not more, lethal effects. Some countries are using depleted uranium in conventional weapons, which blurs the distinction between such arms and non-conventional weapons. The US is accused of widely using depleted uranium to break anti-occupation resistance during the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. The US is the only state to have used nuclear arms on another nation. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed or maimed by two US atomic attacks against the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki during the final days of the World War II. The nightmarish images of the mushroom clouds caused by the bombs have haunted humanity ever since. And this happens as the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency has remained silent over the violation of one of its main goals, nuclear disarmament. The International Court of Justice, in its advisory opinion on the legality of the threat or use of nuclear weapons issued in 1996, unanimously interprets the text of Article 6 as implying that there exists an obligation to pursue in good faith and bring to a conclusion negotiations leading to nuclear disarmament in all its aspects under strict and effective international control. But are nuclear states willing to abide by their disarmament obligations? Facts on the ground do not paint an optimistic prospect.
Well, joining me now live from South Bend, Indiana, editor of Culture Wars magazine, Dr. E. Michael Jones. I'd also like to welcome our guest from London, Vice President of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, Mr. Walter Wolfgang, and also with us via Skype from Madison, American philosopher, Professor James Fetzer. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to Dr. Jones in Indiana, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, or SIPRI, I'm quoting them, Dr. Jones, saying that there's fewer but newer nuclear weapons. Major powers are continuing to reduce, it says, the stockpiles of nuclear weapons. However, they are pursuing weapon modernization programs. So can we conclude from this that the threat from nuclear arms has increased?
Well, it's hard to say because the nuclear arms, once two people had them, namely the United States and Russia, once two people had them, no one would use them again. So it might be a good thing that nuclear arms are proliferating because it prevents other people from using them. The more people who have them, the less likely, I suppose, it is that anyone will ever use them. But if you go back historically, I think that the United States lost a great opportunity at the time of the fall of communism, when they could have shown good faith and they could have reduced nuclear armaments, but instead they pursued their imperialistic agenda, and they forced Russia into a defensive position. But I think if you look at the recent history, the amount of insecurity has grown so much that people feel that nuclear weapons may be their only line of defense. If you look at what happened to Libya, for example, or you look at what happened to Iraq, these countries are just plundered. Well, maybe it's because they didn't have nuclear weapons. I mean, North Korea hasn't been plundered in that way. Maybe this is the message that we're getting now.
In London, Dr. Wolfgang, I'd like to have your opinion on that. I mean, at the start of 2012, 8 nuclear states possessed approximately 4,400 operational nuclear weapons. Nearly half of them, or about 2,000, kept in a state of high operational alert. Only a small fraction of these nuclear weapons, we know, can destroy planet Earth in its entirety several times. Now, is the world a safer place with all those weapons of mass destruction? I guess they're saying that, in fact, you can see this as a line of defense. The more countries have them, he says, the lesser is the probability of them being used. Mr. Wolfgang.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, did you hear the question, or should I repeat it for you?
Yes. Can I hear?
Yeah, I'll just repeat the question again. Would you also agree that weapons of mass destruction or nuclear weapons, the more countries possess them, the less the likelihood that these weapons are going to be used?
The more countries possess them, the more likely it is. Just remember, the more likely... Sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
The more countries... Sorry. The more countries possess nuclear weapons... The more likely they are to be used. You see, there is a fallacy about nuclear weapons, that they are a deterrent. They are not. They can be, under certain circumstances, an incentive to attack. It has also got to be remembered that the theory is, for instance, as far as the British nuclear weapons is concerned, that it's on submarines and the depth charges aren't powerful enough to detonate them. That may or may not be the present situation, but techniques and technology is never static. When you've got a static situation, you try to upset it. So the presence of nuclear weapons means that there is no nuclear balance, and that at some point or other, a weapon will be used, and then there will be a response, and you could have a minor or a major nuclear holocaust. The only safe way with it is to abolish them altogether. Now, the first thing to do is to make the non-proliferation treaty effective. And that means that in the first instance, the proliferators outside the United States, Russia and China, must first of all give up their own nuclear weapons by stages, unilaterally, or by agreement, or by all three. And once that is achieved, you can get an agreement whereby they're scaled down and ultimately eliminated. Inspection nowadays is technically possible. What isn't there is a political will.
Right.
So it is a political and not a military problem.
Right. Let's go to Professor Fetzer now in Madison. Professor, all of the 5 legally recognized nuclear weapon states, China, France, Russia, the UK, especially the United States, are either deploying new nuclear weapons delivery systems or have announced programs to do so. And they do appear determined to keep their nuclear arsenals, they say, indefinitely. Why do you think that they want to do that, regarding what was just said there by our guests?
Well, I agree with South Bend and disagree with London. We're talking about the difference between realism and idealism. In an ideal world, London would be right. The non-proliferation treaty would prevail. Everyone would give up their nuclear weapons, and we'd all be singing Kumbaya. The fact of the matter is that none of these countries are going to surrender their nuclear weapons. And if Iran had nuclear weapons, Israel and the United States would not continue to be talking about attacking them. The point from London about technology, however, is extremely pertinent here, because the New York Times just Friday, 1 June, published a huge article, the lead article, that reported President Obama has approved cyber attacks on Iran's electronic computer systems governing the improvement, the enrichment of uranium. It's stunning that this article was even published. Number one, it reveals the United States is engaging what, strictly speaking, is an act of war against Iran.
Right.
Number two, it acknowledges that Israel has had a role in all of this. And number three, it's talking about Israeli technicians having released this worm they were using to control the centrifuges in Iran as in the form of the Sputnik's worm, which may very well have been responsible for the calamity at Fukushima, which is an extinction-level event.
Right, and now that you did speak about that revelation, Professor Fetzer, I'd like to put that question to our guest in Indiana, Dr. Jones. Right now we're having a revelation in U.S. Media saying that President Obama has been pursuing, alongside of Israel, a plan for a cyber warfare, so to speak, against Iran. Now, we know the United States is only accusing Iran of having nuclear weapons, and there is still no evidence, and there hasn't been up until now, by the IAEA or other bodies, that Iran is a pursuing nuclear weapons. So basically, we have the United States as effectively launching a war, a cyber kind of war, on another nation based on its own accusations. And at the same time, we're seeing that it's modernizing its own nuclear weapons. We could even say that it's violating the NPT, the NPT's Article 6, of course. So where does that put the position of international law?
It puts everyone in a position of opposition to law, because when you have actions like this, the entire community is obsessed with fears that it's going to happen to them. I mean, the United States has a leadership role to play, and they can't expect other people to go along with the rules that they do not want to follow themselves. On the other hand, I think that the main consideration here with the Obama administration is not to attack Iran so that Obama can win the election. In order to not attack Iran, in order not to cave in to pressure from Netanyahu and the Likudniks, he has to take all these other measures to make sure that the American public sees him as standing up and being tough to Iran. These are acts of war, but they're not the war themselves, and I think that's part of the game that he's playing now in order to get reelected, and in order to give the impression that that he's standing up to the Israel lobby at the same time.
Back to London now. Mr. Wolfgang, I'd like to refer to the issue of Israel's nuclear program. How serious do you think that threat is coming from Israel?
Could you just repeat that? Can you repeat that?
Yes, of course. The issue of Israel's nuclear program, how serious do you see the threat coming from the nukes possessed by Israel?
Well, as I say, the position is that, yes, Obama is playing tough. The trouble is that the Republicans are playing an irresponsible game. They're playing an irresponsible game, encouraging a war hysteria, and Obama is trying to resist it. Romney, in this instance, is entirely irresponsible, and sane people in America, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, have a duty to resist this and have a duty to stand up for international agreements, for the ideals of the UN Charter, and for nuclear disarmament and, in fact, a nuclear arms convention which would end nuclear weapons.
Right, Mr. Wolfgang, the question is, our other guests are saying that you're being too optimistic and that is not a realistic approach. What's your response?
Am I too optimistic? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
There is a danger with that game. That an explosion may occur. And I think everybody has to be responsible, including the states which are accused, and has to keep cool heads. If we don't keep cool heads, then I'm afraid we can have a conflagration, and a conflagration can turn nuclear. There has been Western irresponsibility over Iraq and over Afghanistan and over Libya. This must not continue.
Okay, back to Professor Fetzer on this. Professor, we're hearing there, I guess, saying that there exists a possibility that there may be a nuclear attack. And again, referring to Israel, according to that leading research think tank in Sweden, Israel is widely believed, it says, to have produced plutonium for its nuclear weapons arsenal. And it adds that Israel is, and I'm quoting here, may have produced non-strategic nuclear weapons, including artillery shells and atomic demolition munitions. However, we've not seen the case of Israel prioritized, have we? I mean, Israel could be a serious threat for the Middle East.
Oh, absolutely. Israel is the major problem in the world, in the Middle East, if not in the world today. The United States is already using a new class of nuclear weapons in Iraq. During an interview with Christopher Busby, I learned that the genetic effects that have impacted so severely on Iraqi pregnancies, where one quarter are resulting in abortions and stillbirths, that three-quarters have serious genetic abnormalities, that Busby has traced it back not to depleted uranium but to enriched uranium. You can find an article about it on Veterans Today, Fallujah, Fukushima, and the global radiation disaster. I believe that this cyber attack business shows that Iran must be very wary of allowing inspectors into its nuclear facilities, because almost certainly they are going to try to plant these worms, the Sputnik's worms, into the Iranian nuclear facility. So you must be on your guard. And third point, for the United States to be conducting these cyber attacks on Iran and publicizing it is ludicrous in the following sense. No country is more vulnerable to cyber attack than the United States. Therefore, we are making ourselves a very big target by pursuing this line of attack against Iran, which has only been interested in the development of nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, but where I believe, having gone off of the petrodollar, just as in the case of Libya and Iraq, it has become the target for the international bankers who want to prop up the dollar. And because of Iran has gone to an oil bust in accepting currencies in different denominations, that's the real underlying issue here, in not Iran's peaceful development of nuclear energy.
Right, Dr. Jones in Indiana, I'd like to put this question to you as well. When we are speaking about those powers that do have nuclear weapons right now, Israel is among those that has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Do you think that an effort can be made that hasn't been made to at least force it to sign the NPT and allow for inspections to happen? Why hasn't that happened?
I think the only thing that would force Israel to the table would be a nuclear standoff, which means that some other country in the Middle East would have to have nuclear weapons. I think that's the only thing that would force Israel to the table. And other than that, no, I don't think anyone can force Israel to the table. The United States certainly could not do that. No politician in the United States could demand that of Israel. It's just politically impossible, certainly now in an election year.
Right. And another issue that I want to raise here before we run out of time. But Professor Fetzer, is the fact that nuclear weapons are currently being used on the ground, when we're speaking of depleted uranium weapons, of course, in the cases of Afghanistan and Iraq recently, and before that, for instance, in the former Yugoslavia, in Kosovo, why do you think we are seeing these weapons being used? Do you think that they are being tested at this point in time? And why isn't there some international response to this?
Well, it's even more serious than the use of depleted uranium, because Christopher Busby, widely respected for his research, has discovered that enriched uranium weapons are being used in Iraq. So we have a whole new class of nuclear weapons that are being deployed in Iraq, and the international community seems to be ignoring it. Depleted uranium is not the primary problem today. It is enriched uranium, a new class of nuclear weapons that are being used in Iraq. It deserves the attention and condemnation of every country in the world. I believe that South Bend is completely right, that Obama is hyping this to beef up his credentials for being tough on Iran for his reelection. But the fact is, all of this is completely disgraceful, and that the United States may have been complicit with Israel in the development of the Sputnik's worm, and that the Sputnik's worm may have brought about the Fukushima disaster, which is an extinction-level event, is something that ought to be profoundly disturbing to every human being who has any moral decency on the face of this earth.
Right. And Professor Fetzer, just as a concluding remarks, I'd like you to give us, speaking about the NPT, this, of course, is the most important treaty which has been formed to fight against nuclear weapons. How do you think valid it has become at the current times?
Well, Iran, of course, has signed the non-proliferation treaty. Iran, of course, has allowed inspectors. Iran, of course, has no nuclear weapons. Israel, however, has 200 to 600 of this little beauties. Israel has never signed the non-proliferation treaty. Israel won't allow in inspectors. We have a problem here, and it's the incapacity of the United States to deal with Israel in a forceful way that is appropriate to the situation. As South Bend observed, the United States foreign policy has knuckled under to Israel long since. It's a terrible situation, because the Israelis are out to advance their own interests and could care less about those of the United States, or indeed of the rest of the world.
Thank you very much. American philosopher Professor James Fetzer joining us there via Skype from Madison. I'd also like to thank our guest in South Bend, Indiana, editor of Culture Wars magazine, Dr. E. Michael Jones, and also with us from London, Vice President of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, Mr. Walter Wolfgang. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us, and thank you, viewers, for staying with another edition of News Analysis. It's goodbye for now.